Hi, I'm Govind Jayaraman, and this is Paper Napkin Wisdom. Today's episode, we have Patrick Gentempo. Patrick is, again, a man of many hats. This is his second Paper Napkin Wisdom. It was really a two-part napkin. He is a national karate champion, soap opera actor, chiropractor, entrepreneur, and he talked about a philosophy in his first paper napkin, and he continues that discussion as a tool for achievement in his first paper napkin, and now he continues on that theme. Let's talk to Paper Napkin Wisdom repeat guest, Patrick Gentempo. Patrick, welcome back to Paper Napkin Wisdom.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be back. Our conversation has really lit a fire in me in having this exchange. It's been great.
Yeah, likewise. And I'm really excited about doing part two. Now, in part one, we talked about philosophy being the most practical tool for achievement.
And, yes.
And it was definitely a powder keg of a conversation. and that led me to say, okay, we got to do another one right away. And you sent me another napkin that's got me scratching my already bald head. So I'm rooting out what little hair I have left. Can you read it for everyone listening, please?
Sure. Contradictions lead to destruction.
All right. So why did you share that one with me?
Well, this gets to the heart of why philosophy is so practical. This particular quote comes from the philosopher Ayn Rand, and it was something that captured me a couple of decades ago when I first read it and then started to understand the practical use of philosophy. We live in a universe of cause and effect, and so reality is that contradictions cannot coexist in the universe, or in a more practical way, can't coexist in our life. They would cancel each other out or create destruction. So when I looked at how do you identify contradictions and remove them, the process is through the practical application of philosophy. So when you start with contradictions lead to destruction, and you can apply that to every important category of your life, whether it's your relationships, your health and fitness, your career, your parenting, the future as you want a future pace, etc. The more that you find contradictions and can remove them, the more you grow. So to me, personal development is really just that simple. You identify contradictions, you remove them, and you evolve to the next level of effectiveness. And beyond that, I would say this, nobody's ever 100% contradiction free. In other words, that would be perfection. So we're always trying to move toward perfection, but we never actually attain complete perfection as human beings. So by understanding contradiction and getting into the habit of identifying and removing contradiction, we can absolutely transform and upgrade our lives.
And that's a mouthful of a start.
I mean, yeah. Sorry.
You're starting, I mean, forget 0 to 60, that was 0 to 300 in less than a second in a sentence. And I think it's really amazing about this concept, right? Because it really is about accelerating that pace of evolution. It's a pace thing. And if you can identify where those opportunities exist, that the pace of that change, that pace of the transformation, the pace of the leadership growth grows exponentially. And that's what bore out so quickly in your intro, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly it. We get stuck, and I think we get when we get stuck and we become kind of paralyzed, I gave a TEDx talk a while ago, and my closing statement was basically this. I'm paraphrasing, might not be the exact words, but I said that I don't believe people are fundamentally lazy. And that's what many people are confused about. People are lazy. They don't want to work. They don't want to do this. And that's why they don't achieve. And then taxes go up. All the rhetoric that goes around those types of sentiments. And in essence, I said, I don't believe that people are fundamentally lazy. I mean, some people, might have acquired the habit of laziness. But what caused that? What causes inaction is really the question, right? What causes people to not act? And incidentally, there's a lot of successful people that could be taking action that would make them even more successful that don't. So what causes inaction? And I basically said that people are paralyzed by contradictions in a philosophy that they don't even know they own. That's what causes paralysis. That's what causes inaction. So when you become conscious of your philosophy, the consequence of that is that you start to identify where you might have contradiction within it. And as you start to resolve contradiction, suddenly action takes place, momentum takes place, movement takes place, and success happens on a higher level.
I actually really believe in that for leaders, fear becomes the barometer for us. We know that we're doing important work when we feel fear, when our hands get sweaty, and we can't grow as leaders. We can't grow unless we confront that fear and work through it. Much like when you're at the gym, your muscle growth happens at that point of pain. You know, when you feel your arms giving out, that's when your arms are getting stronger.
Right.
And for us as leaders, fear is that barometer. And you've hit the nail on the head in saying that, in fact, by recognizing our philosophy and recognizing our contradictions and eliminating them systematically, we can be more systematic about addressing that point as opposed to just waiting for it to evolve.
Yes, and I think the operative term which you hit upon, which is really right, is systematically. You know, is that there is a system of thinking, a structure of thinking that I believe can map your mind, map your thinking in varying categories of your life. You know, I call it mapping your philosophy, basically. And by doing so, you can have amazing breakthroughs and transitions. And it doesn't have to take a long time. I mean, sometimes learning the process, getting into the habit, you know, that depending can take some time. But literally, once you start acting on it, I've seen transformations and breakthroughs happen like almost instantaneously. It's really kind of crazy.
So let's talk about some minor contradictions that you've observed, maybe in yourself or through your own journey, or that you've seen commonly as you're working on this concept of leadership with other leaders and entrepreneurs. Where what are the most common contradictions that you see that gets us down this path of destruction?
There could be many. So here's a common one that might have to do with parenting, for example. We want to teach our kids lessons and we want to give them an orientation towards morality, let's say. And morality is the third branch of philosophy. The first branch being metaphysics, which is your view of the nature of reality. Epistemology is the second branch, which is the theory of knowledge. So if metaphysics asks the question, where am I, meaning what's the nature of this place? Epistemology would ask the question, how do I know it? Meaning, what are my rules of evidence? How do I draw that conclusion? And then from those emerge the third branch of philosophy, which is ethics, which provides a human being with a code of values and therefore will be a guide to your actions. And so ethics basically asks the question, so now what do I do? And incidentally, purpose emerges from ethics. A lot of people like to start with purpose, but there's something that's more primordial or fundamental than purpose, which is philosophy. Purpose emerges from philosophy. So with that, let's say we're giving little Timmy a lesson, a life lesson, and we want to say, and Timmy's mother is saying to him, Timmy, one thing you should really know and understand is that lying is not good. You know, good people don't lie, and people who want to live a good life and have a good experience in life, they tell the truth. They don't lie. So, okay, great. Timmy's got the lesson. He's excited. He learned another thing about life, another thing about reality, about a view of reality that's led to an ethical conclusion that you want to tell the truth. 20 minutes after Timmy's mother teaches him that lesson, the phone rings and Timmy answers, and it's Uncle John. And he yells from the phone, hey, Mom, it's Uncle John for you. And his mother says, tell him I'm not here. So what seemingly now what happens, we have this kid which is filled with a sense of wonder like all kids are. And we teach him lessons about how life should work. And then within 20 minutes of teaching a lesson, we're contradicting it and not even recognizing the fact that we're doing it. In other areas, I'll tell you where one for entrepreneurs, a big, big, big contradiction comes in money. And I think getting a clear, completely clear, non-contradictory philosophy around money is about the most important thing not only an entrepreneur can do, but any human being can do. We have so many confusing bromides and platitudes that have been fed to us throughout our lifetime from our mothers, fathers, teachers, and preachers about money and the nature of money and what money is and how we should what kind of relationship we should have with money. That, and it's one of the ones I've had to work on significantly in my own life, because you can do everything else right, build a really successful business and still completely fail financially because of contradictions in money. You might have learned, for example, I call these things belief elements, which are your metaphysical views that you pick up along the way. You might have been in the backseat of the car and your parents are driving who are struggling maybe somewhat financially, and they see that the neighbors have a new car in their driveway and they say, you know, they don't deserve that. You know, rich people are thieves. These people are, you hear this, life is not fair. Now, you might have been 6 years old in the back of a car hearing this, and now you're 20, 30, 40, 50 years old. Not even remember that you heard that, but in the back of your mind, you're hearing things like life isn't fair, rich people are thieves, don't bite off more than you can chew, don't try to be something you're not. And at the same time, you're sitting there holding these types of premises unwittingly. And that's why I'm talking about the paralysis, holding a philosophy that you don't even know you have. And because you haven't ritualized the process to go through your philosophy, what happens is that you end up in a circumstance where you're sabotaging your own efforts, in this case, let's say, to earn money and make money. Many people are taught that material wealth and spiritual wealth are on opposing ends of a continuum, that in order to become spiritually wealthy, you have to give up your financial or material wealth. In order to become materially wealthy, you have to move away from spiritual enlightenment. And that is the most hellish contradiction I think there is on the planet, a contradiction between the moral and the practical, where if you feel like you have to make a choice between either doing the moral thing or the practical thing, what are your choices? You can be practical but immoral, or moral but impractical. That's a hellish contradiction. In essence, you have to make a choice. Do I want to be a liar or do I want to be a sucker? So unless you can transcend that metaphysical view and insert a new belief element that solves it, that is non-contradictory about money, spirituality, etc., and if you don't do that, then your prospects of getting financially successful become very remote. And if you do get there, you can't enjoy the money. Oh, you're on mute. Okay, yeah.
So many people fall into this trap, right? So many people end up, I remember one time, it was actually the first paper napkin that was ever done with this woman by the name of Gina Mulliken Long, and she asked me about my life story, and I told it to her, and somewhere along the way, she interrupted me, she put her hand on my shoulder, and she said, somewhere along the way, somebody convinced you that life exists in cycles, and mm-hmm. it goes up and it goes down. Why did you believe them? And it was, you know, you're speaking of that contradiction.
Exactly.
That and I really did. I did believe that that things existed in cycles, and you know, my health, my commitment to my health existed in cycles. I couldn't possibly be healthy and run a business at the same time. I needed to focus on one or the other, and that would mean a compromise, that I would have to compromise.
Right.
That was a lie of philosophy. That was a contradiction of philosophy.
And she asked it perfectly because she lined it up in the first two branches. Why do you believe this? In other words, sorry, do you realize you hold this belief element, you know, this premise, if you will, and why did you believe it? So the first thing is the belief element, which is metaphysics. The second one is your epistemology. Why do you believe that? And that's where a lot of people, when they start to consider, wow, I don't know. I just heard it somewhere, and I really don't have a good reason to believe this. There's no good evidence of it. Now, if you said, well, based on my own personal experience, this, based on pure reason when I think of it abstractly, this, based on what I've seen, you know, published or other people's experience or what's anecdotal, you know, you start to say, okay, I can organize my rules of evidence and say that when things meet this certain criteria, now I have enough evidence to adopt a belief element that I believe is valid. But we need that process.
Yeah, and it really starts off with why, right? Why do I believe this?
Exactly.
It starts off by taking this philosophy that we carry around unconsciously, becoming conscious, and that speaks to the systematic nature that you talked about earlier on, right? I mean, if we can systemize our realization, our uncovery, our discovery of our contradictions, we can resolve them.
Yes, and the impact is radical, especially if people are semi-stuck. And, it, you know, some people, you know, for example, some people might be banging it out in their business. They're doing great because they're so conscious. They radiate so much consciousness on their business, and they're always finding and resolving and upgrading, right? But in their personal relationship at home, it's completely broken down because they haven't radiated the consciousness there. They haven't applied the same, orientation there. So my own view is that you can have it all. I believe if you live consciously enough, you can have great health, a legendary romance, a very successful business, and great quality life, all the things that come into play. I don't believe that you have to sacrifice one to the other if you live consciously enough. I think you can have it all.
Yeah, and certainly I think that's the role that we have as leaders. As leaders, it's our responsibility not only to believe in the fact that we can have it all, but also to help other people understand their own philosophical contradictions and where that's binding them and unlock those. Because in our teams, if we can do that, we can achieve great things together. Like amazing alignment creates amazing results.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And alignment is I think a really important word and concept. Alignment means that there's non-contradiction. Alignment means that things are flowing without obstruction. So that's a really good characterization.
So let's talk about how quickly that can happen, because I know people are sitting here listening and saying, okay, this just sounds like a magic wand. It sounds too easy. How easy is this? How hard is this?
It's kind of easy and hard at the same time. It can be easy. I guess I would say this. For many people, there's a lot of low-hanging fruit. There really is, where they can really get a lot of pretty significant changes in their life through doing this. I mean, I'm in the middle of a class right now, of a 12-week class in what I call the philosophy formula. And, within week two, week three, week four, people are talking about radical shifts in their life. And then the sustaining of it, or the persistence of it, to make sure that you create the new habit and keep it going, that requires work and effort. And then sometimes there could be some deep set stuff that are in certain arenas of your life, certain categories of your life that might take the hard part might be psychological, going digging in there and kind of digging around and taking a true look in the mirror. So I think that for most people, there's probably some elements where there's some low-hanging fruit for them to grab, incorporating philosophy into their lives in a practical way. And then beyond that, there's some other work to do. It's a lifelong process. It's once you begin it, it's a new habit that you never end, I believe. And it's not like you spend all day, every day, just focused on this alone. But I believe that, the art of living consciously is my intellectual mentor, Nathaniel Brandon, wrote that book, which I thought was brilliant. It's just that it's like an art that you learn over time and you develop mastery around.
Mastery is a word that scares a lot of people. I think when people hear the word mastery, they think, oh man, it's just not something I can achieve. But these things are achievable with diligent practice by simply putting, and there's an inertia to it, right? Simply by starting, even starting imperfectly, it's a start. It moves us in the direction of the outcome.
And there's no doubt about it. And really, here's the whole deal. The alternative to not living consciously is living unconsciously. And as painful as living consciously might be, it's far more painful to not live consciously. And that's where you really have challenges and problems in your life, and you become more of a victim, and you look outside of yourself for why things aren't right. It's just no way to live, as far as I'm concerned.
Another thing that people will be thinking as they listen to this is, this is all a very interesting metaphysical conversation about philosophy and ethics and where does change happen? Mm-hmm. But this isn't an abstract thing. I mean, Patrick, you're an entrepreneur. You use this in your business, and your business, one of your businesses has thousands of customers, right? I mean, it's a big...
Yeah, well, yeah, that's actually a business. I've built and sold several businesses, but one of my businesses was in diagnostics. I developed diagnostic technology. I co-developed it, but I had patents on it, and I I built that business over 20 years with, you know, 9,000 diagnostic units or customers on six continents. I've used philosophy to build, you know, vast businesses, at least to the scale that I operate on. And I can absolutely positively credit. I mean, it would help me stumble upon the need of this technology was philosophy, was seeing contradictions in my own practice. I'm a chiropractor by training. I haven't practiced in several years, but I was in practice when I saw a need because there was a contradiction between what I was telling my patients and what I was actually evaluating and examining. And I identified that contradiction and said, you know, I got a problem here. I'm selling a product I'm not sure I'm delivering. I'm selling a thing called improved performance of your health through better nervous system function, but the evaluations I do don't really measure nervous system function. So I set out to develop technology to do exactly that. And when I solved the contradiction for myself, I went out to my community in that particular profession, chiropractic, and solved it for those 9,000 people who bought it also. So I was having the same contradiction they were having. I recognized it and I turned it into a business and evolved it over time. So that's kind of a part of my evolution. So I think in any, now I've been involved in several types of businesses. You know, I have a holding company. I think we have 7 or 8 businesses that we're invested in or involved in my holding company. What I'm inspired about greatly is teaching practical applications of philosophy to entrepreneurs. I don't have an academic background in philosophy, incidentally. This is all learned from me after I got hit by a truck in 1986 in Manhattan, was laid up on my back, couldn't go anywhere, and I got a big book that I read that taught me something about philosophy, and I realized something is there. That's where I read about contradictions lead to destruction, and something clicked. So I don't even have the academic philosophical background. I have just a pure practical application of philosophy background.
And I think that's really an important distinction to make. You know, one of the things that was really interesting about what you were talking just now, Patrick, is something I realized. I realized that, in fact, what many people call disruptive technology actually is resolving contradictions.
Exactly.
Isn't it mind-blowing when you think about it? Disruptive technology, disruptive to the norm, is exposing and resolving contradictions. People viewed your technology as being disruptive.
Completely. It was disruptive.
But it resolved a contradiction. Ironic, isn't it?
It is. And you have it exactly right. And you used the word that's the right word, expose. You see, what do disruptors do? They expose an existing contradiction and then create a new vision saying, we can resolve this. We can fix this societal contradiction or this professional, you know, contradiction, wherever the channel is. But you know, on the widest possible scales, that's how a person gains attention by saying, there's a contradiction, I'm willing to expose it, name it, and I have a solution to it.
It's actually really powerful when we think about it, that we could disrupt our lives.
Yeah.
You know, use that disruptive influence in our lives in a positive direction by understanding these contradictions. And it's equally sweeping.
It's funny, you know, an article came out in a magazine not that long ago that they profiled me in, and I didn't set the title. The person who did the interview did, and the title of the article was The Disruptor. And that's exactly what it is. And why was I a disruptor? Because I would point out contradictions and name them and expose them.
It's fascinating. Patrick, again, grateful for an amazing conversation. Our time together has flown by, and I know I'm going to bring you back on again. So I thank you in advance for the next time.
Yeah, well, I'm thank you. I mean, these are extremely stimulating conversations for me, and again, I'm extremely impressed with how quickly you pick this up and see the applications. Most people don't do that, and I'll come back anytime you want to have me.
That's awesome. Thanks so much, Patrick.
Thank you very much. Take care.
What a great conversation. Thanks so much for that, Patrick. And what a fascinating concept that as entrepreneurs, the contradictions in our basic philosophy, the contradictions on how we look at the world are really the things that lead us to destruction. Or maybe for many of us, keep us in that place where we fail to actually achieve, where we fail to actually see through the opportunities that are in front of us. And it's because we never actually embrace them. We never actually believe them to be possible. I remember when Warren Rustand said to me, when you change the way you look at the world you look at changes. But you must stay rooted in that place. You must stay rooted in that new perspective, that new philosophy. What are you doing to stay rooted in that new philosophy? What are you doing to be consistent and not contradict yourself in thought, word, or action? And better yet, belief. My name is Govind Jayaraman. I want to thank you for joining me on Paper Napkin Wisdom today. Please join in the conversation. You can do so on Twitter at WiseNapkin. You can also follow along on our website, papernapkinwisdom.com. Last but not least, find us on Facebook. Just search Paper Napkin Wisdom. My name is Govind Jayaraman. This was Paper Napkin Wisdom. Make it a great day.